Well, it's nice to be back with you. I hear the service last week went well. It was a good service, enjoyed by those. So thank you to the Guild for leading last week's 11 o'clock service. It's hard to believe, really, that already we're entering into this season of Advent. Summer doesn't seem so long ago, but we're entering and moving through this special season, moving towards Christmas and then on to Epiphany. I must confess that as Elizabeth and I spent last week in Tenerife in temperatures of 25 to 30 Celsius, it felt unseasonably warm for the start of this new year in the church's calendar. And we noticed in Tenerife all the Christmas lights were up on the lampposts and along the front, but none of them were illuminated. And I asked one of the folks in the hotel we were staying why none of the lights were illuminated. And he said, well, we illuminate them at Advent. Isn't it nice to celebrate the season, this new season, the new church year, by lighting lights? And up the front here we have an Advent candle, the first of the four that we'll light during this season of Advent. I always enjoy this season, this time of year. But I know that for some of you, this time of year is a season of mixed emotions. Nonetheless, I hope that as we share together as God's people throughout the coming weeks, we will all be able to recapture the sense of waiting, the sense of anticipation, and then know something very real about the joy of Christmas when we remember how God sent His only Son to be born among us. I always seem to get books at one time or another as gifts. And one set of books I was given quite a number of years ago now, in my late teens, was C.S. Lewis's Narnia Chronicles. I think there's six or seven of them. The first book in these Narnia Chronicles is a book called The Magician's Nephew. And in that book, C.S. Lewis describes a wood where children can only reach that wood by magic. It's a kind of no place, a place in which two children, Polly and Diggory, come to explore, and they call that place the Wood Between Worlds, the Wood Between the Worlds. And from that no place, that Wood Between the Worlds, they enter Charn, a dying world, Narnia, at the dawn of its creation, and they return again at last to their own world. But in the wood between the worlds, time is suspended, and they can hardly begin to imagine the trials and the adventures that await them in the many different worlds they are to visit. By now, many of you will perhaps have heard the good news that Elizabeth and I are anticipating the arrival of our first child later in the month of April. But just now, the two of us are feeling like we're standing in the wood between worlds. We don't know what our child will be like, or what his or her impact on our world will be. Many people, some earlier this morning, were giving all sorts of good advice, but we're not sure. This season is a bit like that. Advent is, for all of us, a wood between worlds. It's a point in the Christian calendar where we stand between two different worlds. The world that cannot imagine Christ, and the world in which He comes to be the only picture of reality that we have. At this point in time, we stand in a world where God's great act of incarnation and redemption is just a shadow. It's a child growing in the womb. Secretly, in the dark. We don't yet know what this child will be like or what his impact on our lives will be. We anticipate the arrival of Christmas. And so Advent is a time of preparing to choose again. Which of these two worlds will we choose? Will we choose the world of the newly born child, where so many of our most dearly held ideas about God and ourselves will be challenged? Or will we choose the old world, a world where there's no life, no birth, but at least there's no challenge? This wood between the worlds is a place of great drowsiness in Lewis's book, because it's not real. It's not a real place. And in Paul's letter to the Romans and in Matthew's gospel, both of these people warn us that the danger of the waiting period, the waiting place, the danger is sleep and oblivion and unpreparedness. Matthew in his gospel, for instance, reminds us that it's very easy to live as though your world is very real and secure, as though there's no need to be watchful or poised for action. Just think of the people of Noah's day. Until they were swept away by the flood, they must have been carrying on their normal lives. Perhaps they were oblivious to the frantic hammering and animal herding that was going on in Noah's backyard. Perhaps they heaped scorn upon Noah and his pet giraffe. Only Noah was prepared for what was going to happen. And in Matthew's gospel, all these little vignettes that Matthew paints of people innocently getting on with their lives, working in the fields, grinding the corn, or turning their backs at just the wrong moment. Any one of these could be us, Matthew warns. And Paul, in his letter to the Romans, warns of the dangers of dozing off during this vital period when we need to be preparing to make life and death decisions. Paul, as an apostle, never really likes to admit ignorance. Matthew is quite prepared to do that, but Paul doesn't. And Paul especially does not want to be ignorant of the time to come. And so instead, Paul urges us to get ready for the coming dawn. It's time, he says, to be polishing our spiritual armor so that it will gleam in the sun that is about to rise. He says, don't go back to sleep. Any moment the alarm's going to go off. Wake up. He says these things to his believers in Rome. You see, he was writing to people who were wavering. They were wavering in their behavior and wavering in their beliefs. Sometimes, yes, they were following the way of God. Sometimes they were losing touch with the ways of God. And Paul exhorts us, his readers. He exhorts those of us who are living today, as he did the first readers, to live so that others, seeing us, might also follow and might receive salvation. But if Paul and if Matthew are proper readings for the start of this season of Advent, with their emphasis on the importance of preparation, then certainly back in the Old Testament, it's Isaiah that reminds us what all this waiting and anticipating and preparing is for. This prophet that we heard read earlier, Isaiah of Jerusalem, one of the many prophets called Isaiah, this prophet wrote during a time of political upheaval, great threat to the people living in that part of the world. There was the constant threat of invasion. The once powerful kingdom of King David had been divided into two kingdoms. There was Israel, with its capital in Samaria up in the north, and down in the south there was Judah, with its capital in Jerusalem. And the nation of Assyria threatened to control the whole area. They were the dominant power then. And in this prophecy, Isaiah of Jerusalem cautions against alliances with foreign powers. And he urges Judah to rely on God and God alone. In Isaiah 2, the first five verses, this prophetic vision is an inclusive vision. The center of these verses is the vision of the Lord's house restored to its proper focal position. But our eyes are drawn towards the stream of the people who are streaming towards God's holy mountain. Why have they come? What is it these people are looking for? Well, Isaiah tells us that they are apparently people who are sick of war. People who know that they have lost any ability to judge whether or not the fight is just. They long for an arbiter. They long for peace. Above all, they long to have a new way of living. They are people who have learned the hard way, the cost of wrong choices. They are people who now ache to be taught, to be prepared for a different world. But Isaiah's own longing, I think, is betrayed in this last verse of the reading. We hear him pleading, "Come, O house of Jacob, let us walk in the light of the Lord." Surely, he begs, surely we can see what God is offering to us. If even the nations who have not known God can look to him and see him as their heart's desire, surely we, his people, can admit that this is the way to life. Indeed, perhaps the two are connected. Perhaps if we, God's people, prepare ourselves to walk in his light, we will make the path plain for others who are lost and longing. Or is it, perhaps shamingly, sometimes the other way around? Will perhaps the desperate people, those utterly despairing of the world they know, will they be the ones to lead us who are supposed to be God's people? Will they be the ones who this season of Advent lead us on God's path? Perhaps we are all indeed just like C.S. Lewis's characters, Polly and Diggory. Perhaps we're all caught in this wood between worlds. Choosing between worlds is never easy. It needs to be prepared for and imagined over and over again. I wonder, as we move through this season of Advent, onto Christmas, when the child is born, will the arrival of that child be a shock of anguish, or will it be a shock of joy? Let us pray.